One day we will stand tall.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The Biden administration is rejecting Moscow's claims that Washington provoked this week's confrontation that led to the downing of a U.S. drone in the Black Sea. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The military's released a 42-second video of what it says is a Russian jet dumping fuel on the drone and then clipping the MQ-9's propeller.
Just decimates the Russian lie about what they said happened or what they said didn't happen.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby notes the Russians say their jets did not hit the drone, claiming it went down on its own after a sharp maneuver. Moscow says the U.S. caused the incident by flying in restricted airspace.
They can announce whatever they want. They can say whatever they want.
Kirby says the drone was in international airspace over international waters. Russia's claims of restricted airspace are just that.
We aren't observing them. They're not legal.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
North Korea says its Thursday intercontinental ballistic missile launch was in response to ramped up U.S.-South Korea military exercises that began this week. The U.S. and South Korea are in the middle of an 11-day major joint military exercise. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was in the African nation of Niger Thursday to offer humanitarian and economic and security aid. At a news conference with his Niger counterpart, Blinken outlined the purpose of the $150 million humanitarian aid package.
Emergency food, safe drinking water, sanitation, hygiene services, and will also support vulnerable refugees and asylum seekers evacuated to Niger.
Blinken's visit to Niger follows a stop earlier in the day in Ethiopia, a trip viewed by analysts as an effort to bolster U.S. relations in a part of the world where Russia and China have been seeking to gain influence. This is VOA News. The U.S. Federal Reserve is lending hundreds of billions of dollars in emergency funds to troubled banks. We get more on the story from the AP's Lisa Dwyer.
The Federal Reserve says that cash-short banks have borrowed about $300 billion in emergency funding from the central bank in the past week. Nearly half the money, $143 billion, went to holding companies for the two major banks that failed recently, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. The money they borrowed was used to pay their uninsured depositors with bonds owned by both banks posted as collateral. An additional $148 billion in lending was provided to other unidentified banks through a long-standing program called the Discount Window and amounted to a record level for that program. Banks can borrow from the Discount Window for up to 90 days. Typically, in a given week, only about $4 to $5 billion is borrowed through that program. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Mexican authorities say some of the six women reported missing early this month have been found dead. We get more from the AP correspondent Norman Hall.
A prosecutor says there is evidence that some of the six women who went missing on March 7th have been found dead. Carlos Zamarripa, head prosecutor of the violence-plagued Guanajuato state, said signs have been found that some of them were killed. The women, who may have been traveling together, disappeared on the outskirts of the city of Celaya. Authorities posted search bulletins for the six women on March 9th. For years, the industrial and farming hub of Guanajuato has been Mexico's most violent state, with the Jalisco cartel waging a turf war against local gangs. I'm Norman Hall.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has ordered a number of improvements in access to mental health care to try to reduce suicides in the U.S. military, but he is holding off on endorsing more controversial recommendations to restrict gun and ammunition purchase by young troops, sending them to another panel for study. The orders issued Thursday reflect increasing concerns about suicides in the military, despite more than a decade of programs and other efforts to prevent them, and spur greater intervention by commanders, friends, and family members. Leaders of unions representing hundreds of thousands of nurses, ambulance crews, and other healthcare workers in England reached a deal Thursday to resolve months of disruptive strikes for higher wages. The deal, negotiated by the government officials and union leaders, would give workers a lump sum payment for the current year and a 5% raise next year. Any strike actions will be halted while rank-and-file members vote on whether to accept it. The agreement doesn't resolve a similar pay dispute involving early career doctors who have picketed this week. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, March 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi declares 14 days of mourning for victims of Cyclone Freddy.
Ours must be an active mourning, accompanied by action. The actions that I'm now coordinating from here are to ensure that all those we have lost are given a proper and dignified burial, and all those who are missing are accounted for.
Could Nigerians elect several female governors in Saturday's governorship election? We speak with one of the candidates. Protests in Senegal turn violent as an opposition leader goes to court. Unemployed South Sudanese youth want their government to create jobs. Ugandan President Museveni lashes out at Western countries over LGBTQ rights.
The Western countries should stop wasting the time of humanity by trying to impose their practices on other peoples.
And the Russian Uranium Company appeals a Namibian government decision. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera has declared 2 weeks of national mourning for the more than 200 people killed by Cyclone Freddy this week. In a televised address Wednesday night, Chakwera also ordered all flags to fly at half staff for the first week. Chakwera announced he would head efforts to assist Malawians affected by the record storm. Lamek Masina has this report.
President Chakwera said the decision to declare a 14-day period of mourning came after witnessing a scale of devastation from the cyclone, one of the longest-lasting tropical storms on record, and the agony victims went through to save their lives. He asked Malawians not to lose hope.
Even so, we cannot afford to mourn while passive. Ours must be an active mourning, accompanied by action. Our immediate actions, which I am here in the southern region to coordinate, we'll be focused on four objectives. First, the actions that I'm now coordinating from here are to ensure that all those we have lost are given a proper and dignified burial, and all those who are missing are accounted for.
Chakwera also said he will make sure that all those who are stranded and trapped are brought to safety. Additionally, he announced that an emergency cabinet meeting he held Wednesday evening. Officials authorized the release of about $1.6 million to assist the thousands of Malawians who were badly affected by the storm. Chakwera noted that the money was not enough and appealed for global support to assist thousands of people now in evacuation camps. Shorai Ngambi is a behavior change specialist for UNICEF. She told VOA at the Naocha evacuation camp in Blantyre on Thursday that the situation in the camp is challenging, especially for children.
In all the camps that we've been to, the situation is very pathetic because we've seen that a lot of people that are in the camps are children. There's a lot of things that they are lacking. For example, you talk of food, accommodation, beddings. We're also looking at issues of health, water and sanitation, nutrition.
Ngambi, however, said the UN Children's Agency was working to address some of those challenges.
As you have seen, we're bringing in chlorine and buckets for the people that are staying in the camp so that at least there's hygiene and to contain the cholera. We're also looking at health, assessing the health of the children in the camps. But also we want to make sure that there's continuation of education.
The government has extended the closure of schools in the southern region until next week, following continued rains in the region. Weather experts in Malawi say Cyclone Freddy has now gone, and that the rains are due to an incoming weather front from Congo. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
In an address to Parliament on Thursday, Uganda's president says he will not allow external forces to bring Western practices in his country. President Yoweri Museveni calls same-sex relations a deviation that goes against African practices. The opposition boycotted his speech, criticizing his views and his alleged failure to curb human rights abuses, including attacks on critics. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakaringi has more from Kampala, Uganda.
In his address to the parliament on Thursday, Uganda President Yoweri Museveni said the Western world should not impose its cultural practices on Africa.
The Western countries should stop wasting the time of humanity by trying to impose their practices on other peoples. Europeans and other groups marry cousins and near relatives. Here to marry within the clan is taboo. Should we impose sanctions on them for marrying relatives? This is not our job. If they are marrying their cousins, that's their problem.
The issue of LGBTQ has always been controversial in Uganda. In 2013, the Constitutional Court quashed a law that punished sexual relations or people of the same sex. But this month, the Ugandan Parliament introduced a law that, if passed, would punish acts of homosexuality among gay and bisexual men, women, and transgendered people. Rights activists have said the law will bring more stigma in society that is divided over LGBTQ rights. Museven, however, says discussions are still ongoing on the issue.
The homosexuals are deviations from normal. Why? Is it by nature or by nurture? We need to answer those questions. This deviant, is he deviant by nature or by nurture? We need a medical opinion on that.
Gay rights activists and their allies say that same-sex relations are found in nature and is natural among people who have never felt an attraction to members of the opposite sex. They say LGBTQ people have always existed throughout history, but many have tried to hide their behavior due to stigma and potential violence. The president also talked about matters to do with the economy and said his government is working to improve citizens' livelihoods in a plan called the Parish Development Model, which is premised on empowering people at the grassroots level. But his address was boycotted by the opposition. The Shadow Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs, parliamentarian Medadise Gona, explains why.
A significant number of our opposition supporters have gone missing for more than a year, and something they describe as the state, which we believe is a group of men and women ruling a country, our country, in conspiracy, cannot account for those individuals.
For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
President Museveni has said in the past that Uganda's security apparatus is taught not to violate people's rights. Nigeria's rescheduled governorship and state assembly elections will take place tomorrow, Saturday. In all, 28 of the country's 36 states will be electing governors. Currently, the ruling All Progressive Congress Party has governors in 21 states, while the opposition People's Democratic Party has 14. 24 women are running from 18 political parties. Beatrice Ituba is running for Rivers State Governor on the Labour Party ticket. She is the chairperson of the Rivers State Council of the Nigerian Labour Congress. Ituba tells me she's running because she wants to provide solutions to the economic and other problems affecting the citizens of Rivers State. She also wants to encourage ambitious young women to pursue their dreams and to view their gender as an advantage and not a disadvantage.
I'm running to be governor because I have seen the misrule, the high-handedness, the sufferings of the masses, and therefore, as somebody who represents the workers of River State here in Nigeria, I decided to come to the ring. And when I win, I'll bring in policies that will alleviate the suffering of the people of my state.
We know that sometimes the hill is high for female candidates. What does this mean for you as a female running?
Well, it's an Herculean task, but I believe that when there is a political will, you can achieve anything. And so we have come into the ring, and of course, the support is overwhelming. Both the men and the women are supporting us seriously. And so based on that, our profile is rising every day, and we believe that we are going to win this race by the grace of God.
Have you run before for this position, or this is your first time?
This is my first time. I have been in labor politics, but I've never been in conventional politics. This is my first time I'm clinched this ticket, and I will also become the governor of River State.
So for a message to young women who might be looking at you and say, wow, I'd like to be like her one day, what's your message for them?
My message is that we can achieve anything so long as we are determined, so long as there is that willingness. And we should not see our gender as a disadvantage. No, whether it should be an advantage for us. Because people know that women have compassion. So women want to do it, and they do it to the best. And so I want to believe that the young women out there, anybody who has an ambition, should go out there and pursue your ambition with all vigor. Don't be intimidated. Just move on. The sky will be your limit.
What do you see as the present issue for your state or for Nigeria?
The present issue here in the state is security, and also the security role of Nigeria. Unemployment is on the rise. Corruption has eaten deep into the fabric of the society. And that's exactly why we are coming to see how we can rewrite that narrative, that ugly narrative, that we can be able to see how we can move Nigeria and our state in particular on the pathway of economic growth and progress.
Before I let you go, I think there's a lot I want to discuss with you. Again, your state is Rivers State, and this is one of the oil-producing area?
Yes, of course. It's a major oil-producing area, the treasure base of Nigeria.
Rivers State, there's been this complaint about cleanup for the oil spills. Is that still an issue for the people of your state?
Yes, it's a burning issue. And these are the issues that when we come on board, we shall be able to bring it so that we can be able to preserve all these outstanding issues. Environmental degradation, pollution, all these are the things that we are suffering here in our state. And I think we are going to bring it to the public domain so that we can be able to address this issue frontally.
Mrs. Beatrice Itubo, thank you very much. We wish you good luck on Saturday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Beatrice Itubo is a candidate for Rivers State Governor on the Labour Party ticket. She was speaking with us from the Rivers State capital, Port Harcourt. Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 17. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Plumes of smoke and tear gas spilled into the skies of Senegal's capital on Thursday as police clashed with opposition protesters. It marked the third day of unrest in the city, where opposition leader Ousmane Sonko is facing trial for alleged defamation. Annika Hamishla reports from Dakar.
Hundreds of protesters surrounded the car taking Sonko to the courthouse as police in riot gear encircled the area. Just before the officers dispersed the crowd with tear gas, Sonko stepped out of the vehicle to send a message. He said, "It's the police that are preventing me from moving. It's the police that have prevented me from getting to my hearing. This is Senegal. The face of Senegal is the dictatorship of Macky, with police repression." He was referring to President Macky Sall. A police spokesperson was not immediately available to comment on the allegation. Sall's refusal to state whether he'll run for an unconstitutional third term in next year's elections has incensed many Senegalese. His administration has also been widely accused of silencing dissent through arbitrary arrests. Senegal's government denies persecuting the opposition or moving away from democracy. Sonko is facing libel charges for allegedly accusing tourism minister Mame Mbaye Niang of embezzlement. Sonko also faces separate charges for rape, which his supporters say were fabricated to prevent him from running for the presidency. Sonko has denied these allegations. His arrest a year ago ignited a week of rioting that led to the deaths of 14 people. No deaths have been reported in this latest round of protests, but violence on Thursday was widespread. Demonstrators hurled rocks at police, burned down grocery stores, and destroyed bus depots. They hauled parked cars onto streets to act as roadblocks and smashed windows. Paulin Maurice Toupane is a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies in Dakar. Senegal, he says, is at a tipping point. Senegal must do everything it can to avoid reaching the level of instability we see in other countries in the region, he says. West Africa has suffered a series of coups in the last few years, and instability in Senegal, long considered the region's most solid democracy, could ripple beyond its borders. Tensions are only expected to grow as the country gets closer to the presidential election in February 2024. Sonko came in third in the 2019 presidential election and has since grown in popularity, mainly among Senegalese youth. 26-year-old Mohamed Diako was among the protesters.
I'm very sad, you know, in this situation in our country. I'm so sad. I'm not happy what is happening. I got this shame inside of me. I got this anger inside of me because, you know, we people, Senegalese people, we don't deserve that. We don't deserve that. We deserve the peace. We deserve love.
A rally for Sonko on Tuesday drew an estimated 10,000 supporters. Annika Hammershaw for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
South Sudanese young people complain they cannot get work and are calling on their government to create more jobs. They say the lack of job opportunities prompts many to join groups engaged in deadly activities like cattle raids. A labor ministry official says the government is partnering with development agencies to create more vocational training for youth, as we hear in this report from Mayang David Mayar in Juba.
Yours is there. 27-year-old South Sudanese Sami Mary and about 10 other young people is scanned several job advertisements posted on a public notice board located at the center of the ministry's complex in Juba. Mary, who graduated with a bachelor's degree in business administration and human resource management from a Ugandan university, says she has applied for several job vacancies she found on the notice board to no avail.
So I'd been dropping papers, doing interviews, but all along in vain, so things are not working out. I don't know whether they look at people's name or the job is like who knows who, we don't know.
Mary, a mother of three, says being unemployed in South Sudan is challenging, especially when you have three kids to put through school. James Madut, who is also looking for work in Juba, said oftentimes youth engage in negative activities in the city and rural areas because they have time on their hands.
Assume maybe I apply for 5 years here or 2 years without calling. Maybe I will go home, I will go to the village. And if I go to the village back there, maybe I will also go and meet with other people who have their own idea. Then they will take me to a different direction. Then from there, I will go to darkness
places. By darkness places, Madut means cattle raids or intercommunal fighting, which he says are the main activities of young people in rural areas with no jobs. Madut and other jobless citizens are calling on the South Sudan government to create more economic opportunities for young people. Mary Pitia, Undersecretary in the Ministry of Labor, says the government is aware of the huge number of jobless youth and it is trying to ensure that young people get the skills they need to be gainfully employed.
We are grateful also to some of our development partners like the UNDP, the African Development Bank. They have funded some of the skills for youth employability project, and through it we give skills to the youth that are needed in the market. So they get trained, they're given the skills, and immediately they go and use these skills in the labor market.
PTR says projects funded mainly by international development partners have supported South Sudanese youth in Juba and five other states in the country to obtain vocational skills for finding work. Some young people in South Sudan say widespread nepotism in the workplace is holding them back. PTR says the Ministry of Labor has developed strict recruitment policies to help organizations to only recruit the most qualified and not familiar faces or relatives of people already working for the government. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
A court in Namibia is hearing an appeal by the local branch of Russia's state-owned atomic energy agency, Rosatom, which is seeking water permits needed for uranium mining. The government of Namibia, the world's second biggest producer of the nuclear fuel, said last year that a mining company owned by Rosatom had failed to prove its uranium extraction method would not cause pollution. Vitalio Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
The Uranium One mining company is asking the court to set aside the decision by the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform on the grounds that the decision is contrary to an article of the Namibian Constitution that requires administrative bodies to act fairly and reasonably. The company said it was not given an opportunity to prove that its method of uranium extraction will not contaminate the underground water that farmers in the area rely on for their livelihoods. Rian van Rooyen is Uranium One's Namibian spokesperson.
Uranium One has launched review proceedings in the High Court of Namibia, in terms of which it seeks to assail a decision taken by the Minister of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform in respect of an application for drilling permits submitted by Uranium One. As the case is currently sub judice, Uranium One will refrain from further comment in respect of the pending litigation.
Minister of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, Kalesh Ladvine, told VOA in an earlier interview that Uranium 1 must present scientific data that shows no contamination of underground water will take place if the company is granted permits to continue with uranium exploration.
It is not anything against the company or the investment. It is a principle that we have to look at that guards against possible contamination of a very important renewable resource.
Schladwein's decision to not grant Rosatom's Namibian subsidiary a water permit is supported by various local farmers who are listed in an affidavit in the court case. One of those farmers, Godi Rirako, who is also a community activist, lamented what he termed extractive industries that come to Namibia with a promise of spearheading development. He says the community cannot seek development at the expense of the long-term effects that pollution may have.
Now, who says the method is clean and it does not contaminate the underground water? No one knows what happens underground. And anything that you put into the water that others drink or that we drink will have detrimental effects on our health and the health of our children and generations to come.
The Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform is listed among 39 other respondents in the affidavit where the Russian outfit is asking the court to set aside a decision made by the government not to grant it water permits. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Singapore, where Nigeria's top table tennis player, Aaron Akwadri, has continued to set records after becoming the first African to qualify for the quarterfinals of the WTT Singapore Smash. Aaron defeated world number 4, Tomokazu Harimoto, in the round of 16 of the men's singles event at the Infinity Arena on Thursday. The Nigerian outclassed Harimoto to end his losing streak against the tournament's fourth seed at 11-7, 13-11, and 11-7. Before the historic win, the Nigerian had lost thrice to the Japanese superstar, who is ranked 4th in the world. Aruna, who is ranked 14th in the world, showed class and composure to stun Harimoto at the big stage in Singapore. In mixed martial art news, Nigeria's Kamaru Usman is gearing up for a violent showdown with Leon Edwards in their trilogy bout at the UFC 286 main event on Saturday, as the former champion looks to regain his welterweight title. The Nigerian, who outpointed Edwards in 2015, lost the title to the Jamaican-born Briton in August 2022 after dominating the 31-year-old until a head kick knocked him out seconds to the end of the encounter. The Nigerian-American will take on Edwards at the London's O2 Arena on Saturday, and Usman has claimed that he is in a rare, violent mindset heading into the bout. In volleyball news, Esperance de Tunis defending champions CS Sfaxien, UST Sfax and AS Marsa have all booked their ticket to the semifinals of the Tunisia's Volleyball Cup 2022-2023 season after Wednesday's quarterfinal matches. Esperance defeated US Carthage 3-love, AS Marsa knocked out AST Sfax 3-1, while CS Sfaxien eliminated MS Bosalem. UST Sfax got into the last 4 after a win over Sadia Sidi Bouassiad after their 3-1 victory. In the semi-final matches scheduled to be played between April 24th and 28th, Esperance de Tunis will face UST Sfax, while CS Sfaxien will meet AS Marsa. And out to cricket, where former South Africa captain Dane Van Niekerk has retired from international cricket at the age of 29, having been left out of the squad for last month's Women's T20 World Cup due to fitness concerns. Van Niekerk played 194 times for South Africa across 3 formats and was the first bowler to make 100 ODI wickets for the women's team. Van Niekerk last represented her country in September 2021 before a broken ankle ruled her out of the 2022 Women's 50-over World Cup in New Zealand. In football news, FIFA President Gianni Infantino was re-elected on Thursday in Kigali, Rwanda, to lead a richer-than-ever soccer body with an ambition to add new and bigger competitions despite growing weariness of him in Europe. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, March 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. I am James Butte in Washington, wishing you